This is an NITV radio podcast. For the full program, visit sbs.com.au/NITV radio.
The duty failures that we're seeing come through that have led to the pilot project in the first place have tended to be failure to act on disclosed breaches of family violence orders. So where someone has an intervention order in place, they call the police don't attend. Another common one is a failure to prosecute breaches, so where people, you know, have been recorded as breaching an intervention order and there may be independent witnesses or very good evidence that that's not occurring. The incorrect identification of survivors as perpetrators is something that's happening more and more often. So police attending a family violence altercation, maybe a neighbour has called about, and incorrectly identifying the person who's actually the survivor of family violence as being the primary perpetrator. And so the survivor in that instance becomes subject to a family violence intervention order application and sometimes an intervention order as well. From there on, there are many, many different flow-on effects that profoundly affect women's lives, particularly incarceration. Once the criminalisation happens, people can be sent to prison. And of course, Aboriginal women in particular find that their children are then removed from home, Aboriginal women being predominantly primary carers and less likely to have a secondary carer in the life of their children.
You've had some training recently regarding responding to police duty of care and the failures in family violence matters. Who was that training targeted for, and why is it important to have that training?
The purpose of that training was to skill up community lawyers and some other lawyers, so progressive lawyers from other organisations, in ways of supporting survivors who have experienced poor policing or poor policing responses in family violence matters. So that might take on the form of lodging complaints against police. It might be responding to criminal matters arising from their interactions with police. It might be child protection or other family law matters. It could also be civil matters possibly as well. So there's all kinds of different legal avenues for responding to poor policing in family violence. What we want to do is to enable and empower other lawyers to be able to support survivors throughout the process.
When you're talking about issues around duty of care towards women, are the responses similar for women who are living perhaps with issues around homelessness? I mean, are you seeing some disparity there from women who are living on the street when it comes to their dealings with police and family and domestic violence? Because people are still in relationships.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Look, there are big discrepancies in the ways that we are seeing policing roll out. It's not only to do with demographic differences such as homelessness, income, Aboriginality, but it's certainly a factor. I think it's undeniable that the way that homeless women are policed and their experiences with policing are across the board different to the way that a middle class or an upper class woman living in the suburbs would be policed. Once you're homeless, of course, you've got all kinds of other layers of disadvantage that play into your interactions with police. People who are experiencing homelessness are more likely to have a disability. They're more likely to have lower levels of literacy and numeracy, which will impact on their way, their ability to advocate for themselves with the police. They're less likely to have an address for legal information to be sent to. Poverty, discrimination, mental health issues, self-medication, using drugs and alcohol, all of those things are much more likely for somebody who's homeless than somebody who's not. So absolutely, once somebody is living on the streets, the way that they will be impacted upon by policing, and in particular by poor policing, is very different.
Now, a term that came up with that training was the use of the word frequent flyer when it comes to police dealing with family and domestic violence when it comes to the representation for a woman.
It's a very negative term and extremely offensive. It's one that duty lawyers are seeing more and more of. And in some circumstances, there may be another term that prosecutors or police are using to deride these women, I suppose. More and more what we're seeing is women who have a history with police, are known to police and are known to government departments. So a typical example is a woman who has grown up in child protection custody will be criminalised because of living in residential houses or on the streets and at an early age and be known to police that way also. And as a result of all these other factors of disadvantage, is also much more likely to be experiencing family violence, both as a child, a young adult, and as an older woman. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is this negative connotation with women who experience family violence over and over again, where they're doing exactly what they should be doing and reporting that family violence, this derogatory term, frequent flyers, is being applied in a way that implies that these women either are not genuine survivors of family violence or that they are genuine survivors of family violence, but due to their personal situation are not deserving of the same kind of support as other women in that circumstance.
Erin, has there been any noticeable changes since the handing down of the recommendations from the Royal Commission into family violence in Victoria? Has there been any cultural shift for police or responses being taken more seriously?
This is very much a pilot project that we're running, so we don't have access to that sort of information. Certainly, one of the things that came out of the Royal Commission was that there has been little to no resources allocated for survivors who've experienced these family violence duty failures. But it's really too soon to say whether there's been a cultural shift or not. One of the things that we really want to do is to create a solid evidence base about what's going on so that we can then advocate for systemic change accordingly.
What's the process? I mean, I know there's a process regarding a lawyer or an advocate when there is a complaint or a woman is seeking support, but what's the process if there are allegations of police mishandling women?
There are a few different processes. So there are two complaints processes that women can go through. One is directly with the Victoria Police, another one is through IBAC. There are also different methods of advocacy. So some centres are taking much more of a direct advocacy line with police stations, calling up directly and speaking to the sergeants involved about the way in which cases are being managed. And then, of course, there are other ways of advocating for women's rights as well. So if, for instance, a woman has been misidentified as a perpetrator of family violence and then subsequently has criminal matters as a result of breaching intervention orders, that can be defended. So there's actually a whole array of different ways that it can be addressed and what the process might look like, which makes it all the more important, really, that lawyers in particular are across the different range of ways that this can be dealt with.
I guess, are you seeing, when it comes to your cases and it comes to these complaints, are you seeing any positive action from the complaints being made?
Sadly, not a lot. We're seeing very little in the way of cases being substantiated or complaints being substantiated. But we don't think that's a reason to stop trying. And certainly we are looking at different ways of trying to hold police accountable for their duty of care towards family violence survivors. So one of the things that we're hoping women will do is to come forward with their stories of the way that they've been treated and the impacts that might have had on their lives. We will be using that in an anonymised way so that we can collect that data and use it to advocate for systemic change. We know that the systems as they stand at the moment are not working. We are hopeful that we can change the systems.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for joining NITV Radio. Thank you for your time.
A pleasure. Thanks very much, Kirsten.
This was an NITV Radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio or download the SBS Radio app.